Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at NewBalance.com.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Hey, everybody, come on in. I am Matt Norlander here with Cover 3 podcast Chip Patterson. That's right, we got the crossover. Everyone on YouTube, hello. Drop your questions and your comments with frequency. If you're listening to this on your phone, thank you for listening. However you're getting it, as fast as you're getting it, we appreciate you. We've got a lot to get to. We got to set up this Final Four. Gary Parrish is in the air right now. And so we did not want to wait until late Sunday to get you a pod. We wanted to go real time, especially for our live audience that likes to watch us on YouTube. So do go ahead and smash or tickle or massage or just say hello to that like button if you could. If you're watching live, if you're watching after the fact, hello, how we doing? I am wearing my Beach Boys shirt. This is for the Beach Boys from FAU. I was at the Garden on Saturday night. I know the podcast from Saturday night with Cobb and Parrish recap that. I will get to those owls, those incredible owls, those impossible owls. I will get to them before we get out of here. The Final Four is set. The total seed number, if you add them all up, we're at 23. It's the second highest in history. The highest, 2011, which also went to Houston. This is also because we have Miami playing UConn and FAU playing SDSU. Stop. Just, again, let that soak in. Miami, UConn, FAU, San Diego State. It's the first time since 1970 that we have had a Final Four with at least three of the participants having never made a Final Four before, making their debuts all at the same time. How about that? How incredible is that? Also, it's the first Final Four ever without a number one seed and a number two seed and a number three seed. My goodness, how about that? A year ago, we had all Blue Bloods, Kansas, Carolina, Duke, Nova. Those tournament wins last year totaled up to more than 400. This year, UConn's got 63 tournament wins to its name. FAU, you know them all. It's four. San Diego State has 10. Miami has 15. And almost all of Miami's have come under Jim Larrañaga. We are going to get to Texas over Texas losing to Miami first. But Chip, how you doing? And what is your what's your reaction to this Final Four we have and what we saw go down on Sunday?
Oh, I mean, first of all, it's good. Like, you and I got hired about the same time. Like, we've been working at CBS for like 12, 13 years.
It's been well over a decade at this point. Yes.
I got butterflies before we hit record because, and like, this is the thing that I want to connect with. Like, everybody, like, shout out to everybody who's watching live. I see all of you in the chat. Like, am I going to do a duck impression? Or like, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Like, because you're always trying to hunt the duck when you're doing that ISO defense, right? But okay. I do think that this is one of those shows that as a listener of the Ion College Basketball Podcast, I'm always fired up for. So like, even still all this time, super excited to be here. And Gary Parrish did say, in addition to, look at me, I'm an Aztec. He also said that he would be watching. And I know that he's got the in-flight on board, like season pass, gold standard, like everything that you can possibly have for his preferred airline. And so I hope he is watching. Hey, GP, I hope that we're doing you justice here.
Think he's actually watching right now. There's no chance. There's no chance. I'm actually going to say there's no shot. No.
I wouldn't be
surprised if he was. He was kind of, he's kind of sad that he was going to miss out on this one.
Yeah. Well, Paris and I will be back on Tuesday to preview the Final Four in a typical episode. But we want to get this up as quickly as we can. And
Exactly. Like get me called in. And also, like, on the if this first game had been the second game, I can't say that I'm as fired up. I cannot say that I'm like charging in after we went. What was it? We started off. We had like Greg McDermott calls a timeout, 30-second timeout to be able to like try to set up a good shot. But it was a Baylor Shireman air ball. And then all of a sudden we had a media timeout. Everyone complains about the like commercial kickoff commercial. How about the commercial air ball commercial that we had during the slugfest that was San Diego State outlasting Creighton? But you know, there's a lot to unpack here from both of these games, from the matchups that we've got ahead. Fired up to be with you, man.
Yeah, no, it's listen, it's a fascinating Final Four. I got no issues with it. I'm willing to admit that, like, if it was Creighton instead of San Diego State, because FAU can play any kind of game, we would have a lot of good potential for two really unpredictable, exciting games. San Diego State will dictate that game to almost certainly be decided under the score of 65 for the winning team. But whatever, we are. We're all too happy to.
Can we go like a general question here? Because
You got.
Yeah, all right. So Ryan in the chat says, "Is this the most entertaining tournament that we've had?" I'm going with yes, absolutely top three. And the thing that makes this interesting: zero buzzer beaters. We've had a lot. Like Furman is our like closest thing that we have. One.
And oh, by the way, Tramiel had a foul shot. Tramiel hit a foul shot with like two and change. It's not the same. I know.
Yeah, but with no buzzer beaters, we've had phenomenal comebacks. We've had controversy. We've had incredible endings. And, like, yeah, from an entertainment standpoint, 100%.
It's been great. It's not the most entertaining one ever. And I love, Chip, I love me some NCAA tournament every single year. I love every variety. No doubt about it. But this isn't, because we haven't had a buzzer beater and, you know, there haven't been, we didn't get, you know, just an assembly line of amazing finish after amazing finish. There have been crazier ones, but it has been tremendous. And let's get into Sunday's action. We're going to go Texas over Miami first. So, I said on HQ, I think it's 70% Miami wins it and comes back and 30% Texas collapses there. And we'll get to the Larrañaga stuff and what he's done, because I do want to touch on that as well. But man, oh man, Texas. Okay, so there was I don't know. The game happened and ended. I hopped on HQ. I talked about this for 15 minutes. I took off my dress shirt, my jacket. I tossed on a Beach Boys shirt and I hopped on the podcast. So I haven't like really like sat there and digested. It feels like the call that was going to be O'Meara's fifth that then became the rightful call.
The Cunningham.
Yeah, because he was undercutting him. Like, I get it. You want to have the ability to box out. That guy was backing out of a garage that had his doors closed. Okay, like that had to be the call on Cunningham. It feels like that might have been the turning point there. But just some stuff off the top here. Jordan Miller, phenomenal. 27 points on 7 of 7 shooting, 13 of 13 from the line. This is a guy who, Miller, I've mentioned him many times on the pod.
We were taking ACC tournament. We're like, who is the one player who could take over right now and like transcend what Miami's ceiling is? Because Isaiah Wong has the ball in his hands all the time. Norshad Omier is clearly, like, especially with some of the injury troubles that he had, was like the X factor everyone zeroed in on. You and I have been simpatico with the idea that if you really want to take Miami to the next level, then Jordan Miller is the guy that's going to be able to do it. And the stuff that he had, did you get a chance on HQ to hear what he had to say after the game when he was talking? He was talking to Tracy Wolfson, and Tracy had clearly gotten into this a little bit on the off day on Saturday, where he was like, the pain of losing that Elite Eight game last year was like an intense motivating factor. And then Jim Larrañaga said the same thing when Jim Larrañaga came in. He said, Jordan and Isaiah were talking to everybody in the locker room. They were like, we want to go further. Like, we want to go further. And I think that is something that is so cool to me. Like, I've gotten a lot of questions, and I'm sure you've gotten a lot of questions where it's like, is the transfer portal, is like the way that you remake a roster every year, is that why this NCAA tournament is so crazy? Like, yeah, maybe. Like, of course it has to play a role. But when we do have those stories of a tournament experience and the heartbreak that is felt, and then when you bring that back and you transmit it to your teammates and you say, like, look, like, this is what it's going to take, and we want to go further, it seemed like Jordan Miller, A, in the off day before this game even tipped off, had been able to deliver that message to the rest of Miami's roster, and then to also follow that up with being the best player on the court, either team. I mean, that's some cool stuff. Like, that is cool college basketball, NCAA tournament stuff that I love.
I completely agree with you. It is, man, oh man, this Miami story is something else here. As for the game, and Miller, so he's the first player. So Miller is the first player to score 25 in a tournament game on 100% from the field and the line since, you already know it, Chip, who?
Christian Laettner.
Laettner in 92 against Kentucky.
Yeah.
What a performance.
My phenomenal. God. You know, and it's funny. Like, I actually went back to the spectrum, you know, emotionally, psychologically, you know, did my own little like darkness retreat, and went back to that 1992 Elite Eight game.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it in advance of the Gonzaga UConn game, which was nothing like to Kentucky at all. And we'll get to like more Final Four stuff later. But I have been thinking about that game and sort of like those sort of transcendent performances and what it requires to be able to go and get it done. And Miller was absolutely there.
You can see the box score if you're watching on YouTube here. Now, to keep this up for a couple more minutes, I'll read off this. One, we keep saying Jordan Miller's underrated. He's no longer underrated. Same thing for Larrañaga. He's not the most making the Final Four. Jim Larrañaga is no longer underrated. He can no longer be declared that, in my opinion, there. But you see what Miami was able to do. 59% from the field, and they were cruising above 60 for much
all
of the game.
The entire
game until the end. By the way, Miami's down what? They were down 13 with 13 to go. Mm-hmm. They just got to the line way more than Texas did. Miami from 2-point range was outrageous. What issue? They shot 27 of 41 from inside the 3-point line, and only missed four foul shots. To quote our buddy Seth David, that is how you get Capone.
So, and, like, what do you make that out? I wanted to pitch that at you. So they make 11 3-pointers in the Sweet 16, and like from the jump, like they didn't. Oh, let me see my notes right here. They did not have a single 3-point attempt until 7:30 left in the first half. Is that Texas's defense that sort of forces their hand? Like, what is your eye?
I think that's part of it. Yeah, because Texas can get out and guard you like that. And there were some, I mean, there were some shining moments here from Texas on that end of the floor until Miami flipped the game. Like, I thought Hunter played really well. I thought Carr had a pretty good overall game. And in fact, he was able to stay in after taking that shot from Omir on the inbound there. Bishop had some moments there. You even saw Dylan Mitchell. Dylan Mitchell had an outrageous block. In fact, my mind went to a place where I was like, we're going to get Dylan Mitchell against Andre Jackson in the Final Four. No, we are not. Texas is going home, and it will be Miami instead. And I'm more than okay with Miami's litany of athletes matching up with UConn. It's going to be a fun matchup no matter what. But you'll notice, like, Miami's a team that takes a lot of threes. It took 8 in this game.
Right.
And I'd be interested. I don't know if anyone's asked. And as we're doing this, literally, Larrañaga hasn't even gotten to the, I don't think he's even gotten to the post game presser yet, because they got to do the net cutting and they got to do all that stuff. So we won't know this in real time in the podcast.
That's,
but I am interested
cutting,
to know if
net
what's
cutting.
Up? You, net that, cutting.
I just want to make sure you said net cutting.
Net cutting. That's correct. Net cutting. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Net cutting. I'd be interested to know how much of that was Texas and how much of it might have been a game plan, a wrinkle, because they were able to get it done down low. Omir had 11, Pack had 15. Poplar again carried them for spurts there, and they just they did a wonderful job on Larrañaga. He's the fourth head coach to make multiple Final Fours as a 5 seed or worse. This will not be a trivia time. You want to know the other ones? Here they are: Larry Brown, Tom Izzo, and Brad Stevens. What do they all have in common? They are in or are going to the Hall of Fame. Jim Larrañaga should be going to the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. Okay, because only he and Larry Brown have taken 2 programs to the Final Four as a 5 seed or worse. Brad Stevens, of course, did it twice with Butler, and then Izzo's obviously only done it with Michigan State. Larry Brown did it with multiple teams. And Larrañaga should be well on his way, man, to orchestrate this. How about this? He does this not just on the 17th anniversary of doing it with Mason, okay? What is somewhat forgotten about that Mason game was, and I can't believe it's been 17 years. I remember being in my living room with my brothers and my parents. That was a Sunday, and that was, I think, the second game in DC. It might have been the first one. They were down 12 points in the first half. That Patriots team was to that just beast of a UConn team, just down big time. They rally, they win it, they take it to overtime there. This one, they're down 13. In fact, I think they were still down like 10 or so with 8 minutes to go in this game. And the reason they won it, there were only two times in this game when Miami missed two shots or more in the game. They missed three straight in the early part of the first half, and then they missed two in a row in the 11-minute range with 11 and change to go. Other than that, they didn't go any point in the game where they missed more than two in a row, or two in a row, period. That is why it got done. There were some turnovers that created some of that up and down and skittishness. Texas obviously was shooting lights out for much of the first 75-80% of the game. If Texas finishes shooting 50% from the field, 40% from three-point range, shot 73% from the line, comported itself basically as well as you probably could expect it to. But Miami was a good matchup, and we got an incredible reach. The score doesn't reflect how tight the game was. And oh, by the way, how about this now? Five seeds are 5-1 all time in regional finals against two seeds. 5-1 all time. Shouts to Dave Warlock of the NCAA who tweeted out that nugget as well. Any other takeaways from this one, Chip?
There was an unbelievable image during some of those final free throws where none of the Miami players are on the block, but they're all arm in arm. Like, it's one guy at the line and it is the other four, and they are all arm in arm. And the reason why that stands out to me is that the only players who finished in double figures were the starters. Like, what was it, 5 bench points? And they all come from Joseph. Everything that Miami got was from its starters. And one of my notes that I was making in preparation for this podcast, again, butterflies, expectations, all those things, is that what I saw in San Diego State Creighton was Creighton run out. And we'll get to this game in a little bit, but like, Creighton's a short rotation. San Diego State's a deeper team.
Yes. Yes.
Ran out of legs. Jumpers were coming up short. They were giving up offensive rebounds. Like, okay, like, you're running out of gas. And I totally understand it, but that's what's happening. And I thought that was what was happening. And those four players, whoever was at the free throw line, the other four, they were all arm in arm for Miami in these two weekends. Those five have been enough. And that is just, that's cool, man. Like, you've done a lot on this podcast talking about every tournament is different. We try to tie together all these different threads, but I want to appreciate this Miami team, the regular season champions in the ACC, going to the Final Four for the first time in program history. Like, they stand against what I thought was a developing narrative. Because if Texas wins this game, the narrative is, well, look, Texas, deep. FAU, deep. San Diego State, deeper than Creighton. Like, UConn's not, like, terribly deep, but at least, it's sort of built into this narrative that in a year where nobody was good, like, if you just had enough bodies to be able to sustain injury issues, foul trouble, like, whatever it was, that you were going to be able to advance in the NCAA tournament. But Miami was just better. I mean, it was really impressive, and it speaks to the camaraderie of a group that, shout out to Life Wallet and all that, but like, the camaraderie of a group that Jim Larrañaga has fostered, the way they play for each other, they seem to, based on my view of them on the court throughout this season, and especially in this NCAA tournament, like, they seem to have bonded together in a way that overcomes a depth deficiency to some of these other teams that have made deep runs.
And on Texas, real quick, this is stinging, obviously. Had Texas won, I thought it had a healthy chance to give Connecticut a good game and win a national championship under an interim head coach, which would have been a Steve Fisher situation, and then the ties that bind Steve Fisher built up Brian the San Diego did. State program. There's a lot of that right now, by the way. I guess we'll say that. I'll try and say that more for the end when we just do a quick preview of the Final Four. But in case I forget it, I'll mention it here. Like, FAU didn't even have a program until 88, didn't go D1 until 30 years ago. SDSU is up there. Like, Baylor's probably the greatest reconstruction, but SDSU was a nothing program until Fisher got there and Dutcher you know, took over. Miami didn't have basketball for like 14, 15 years and finally got it back. And, well, UConn is UConn. So very fascinating overall. As for Texas, though, and Rodney Terry, I do think he's going to get the job. It hasn't been offered yet. This is just in talking to a few sources and the signals coming around there. So Chris Del Conte, the AD, did go on record. I think he told Wolfson, and she gave an update in game today. And then he also told Dennis Dodd, he told the Dodd father this as well. So I think he told a few people on the record. But he was never going to go forward with that process formally until Texas's season was done. Now, it would have been kind of awkward if Texas made the Final Four and that was still the case because he would have been asked about it. And then maybe the hand would have been forced. I don't know. I do know that the staff hasn't been given like a direct signal that this is for sure coming, but there's a lot of hope and optimism that it is. I'll admit there's still the potential that there's a dark horse candidate out there, but my expectation is that Rodney Terry will get the job. I think he's earned it. It doesn't mean that it won't ultimately prove to be the wrong decision. We could look up in 3 years and Texas has fallen to, you know, seventh or eighth in the overall hierarchy and its new digs in the SEC. That might be the case, or maybe Rodney Terry gets Texas to the tournament yearly and he's, you know, two of the next three seasons, like they make second weekend runs. Like that would be more than satisfactory, obviously. And you don't have to give him a huge contract, and, you know, you don't have to offer him 7 years at $4.5 million, and they won't, by the way. But absent of having an absolute home run waiting in the wings, I don't think that's necessarily the wrong move. So I'm anticipating that being the way that goes. And I know Texas fans, and plenty of them are all in on it. Some are probably feeling a little ambivalent in the moment. If you're a Texas fan watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, you're just like, man, that felt like a Barnesian ending. I don't know about these vibes right now.
No. All right. So look, so here's my take on this. So we were on the verge of the first Texas Final Four since 2003.
I'm with you.
And we were already at the first Elite Eight since 2008. Shout out to DJ Augustine. But Charlotte Bobcats legend, obviously.
Yes,
we are not dealing with a program where the standard, like where the, like what has been like proven is that high. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think that because Texas basketball is considered a top 10 job, that is because of the athletic department, the finances, the revenue, and like all the things around what comes with being a part of the Texas athletic department. But in terms of like what your expectations are for success, especially in the postseason and the NCAA tournament, Rodney Terry can do more Elite Eight runs. Rodney Terry is more than capable of getting Texas to the tournament, getting Texas to the second weekend, based on the way that sources coming in for Matt. Based on the way based on the way that Texas has performed historically in the modern era in the NCAA tournament, Rodney Terry can do that. Like that to me seems like a no-brainer.
I need you to keep going longer than that.
Okay.
I'm good. we'll see if they text back, but yes.
Rodney Terry, Kevin Durant.
I hear you on that. Absolutely. Well, that's Miami, Texas. We got a good one. I always love give us a nice final regional final on Sunday night. And Miami, Texas delivered. I was just waiting on that one other counterpunch from Texas that did not land. But credit to Jim Larrañaga, 73 years old and going back to the Final Four. Canes, man. The Hurricanes are going to the Final Four. All right. That's that one. We got to talk about San Diego State Creighton, of course, and what went down there. And we will. But first, Nada, do your thing.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Sorry, still texting. So let's talk San Diego State, creating the other regional final from earlier on Sunday. Felt like a toss-up going in. It certainly played that way. We can get to the game stuff, but let's just get to, I guess we need to get to the call. I'm not that compelled to talk about it, but here we go. Yes or no? Foul on Ryan Nembhard against Darion Trammell. Chip, what say you?
Foul. Yeah, he had his left hand on his hip, and that's a foul. And I love the way it was described, where if the offensive player beats you, and that is exactly what happened on the very beginning of this one-on-one play, was that Trammell beat Nembhard, had an advantage, and then the left hand delivers a push. That's a foul. It's a good call. I was in Stanford for the first weekend and to experience, you were just on with Hakeem. You were just in Stanford, but Hakeem and Joe Musso were debating the LeBron James block on Andre Iguodala from the 2016 finals, right? Was it a goaltend? Because LeBron James's finger swipes the net. So it's like, is that a goaltend or is that an iconic block? This, that, or the other. And what I came back to was the swallow the whistle principle. And I am, in the NBA, a swallow the whistle principle guy because it's a 7-game series. Because there are other opportunities for you to be able to prove that you are the best team. But in a single game, like a single elimination tournament, like the NCAA tournament, if it's a foul at the 4-minute mark, then it has to be a foul at the end of the game. And we saw Nembhard get beat, and we saw Nembhard put his left hand on the hip and push him just a little bit. It's a foul. And so credit Trammell for knocking down the second of two free throws to be able to seal the win. The Baylor Shireman might have put his foot on the line also on the inbounds pass that then we also, reviewed 1,000 times, which built into this exhausting ending. But
it did. I know that was a bummer.
It was a bummer ending, but
I think that's the issue people had with it. It was like, give us a buzzer beater or give us OT. Don't give us that. But it was a foul. It's a foul.
Yeah, it was a foul. So sorry to be so long with it, but got to do my Iron College basketball duty and be a little long winded.
Yeah,
and
that's what we tend to do here.
That's what you do.
Aztecs played it the way they wanted to play it. Now Creighton's capable and very nearly did win. I mean, Creighton can beat you in the 50s, 60s, 70s, or 80s. It's built for that. Not deep, but still built for it. Nembhard started hot, then faded late. Kalkbrenner was mostly good, although there were a few opportunities late that he let slip
away.
Dude,
he missed some bunnies. It was so frustrating.
Sometimes I tend to get diplomatic on this, but let's be real here. Creighton was 7 of 16 on layups and dunks, and San Diego State was not much better. It was a 57-56 final that should have been, even 66-65, something like that, a little more. There was a lot that was given away there. But Lamont Butler just coming up big. I wouldn't have believed that San Diego State could have gotten to the Final Four, beating Alabama and beating Creighton and having Matt Bradley, the team's only, I'm almost positive this is, I was looking at this going into the regional semis. I think Matt Bradley was the only player for San Diego State that was averaging double figure scoring on the team, for the season. He had 2 points against Creighton. He had two. And against Alabama, he had 6. You tell me he scores 8 total points. I'm telling you, SDSU has no shot.
No, I push back because that's not how SDSU is ultimately built. It is not the double digit points. It's the double digit minutes. Because for Creighton, outside of here's the minutes for their starting five: 35, 37, 37, 37, 38. No bench. They were running out of gas. They had no legs. No legs on the jump shots. No legs on the three-pointers. On defense, they were giving up offensive rebounds. And, like, officially, the offensive rebounds, like, San Diego State got 13 of them. But it just felt like all 13 of those were the most significant offensive rebounds that you could possibly have. And sometimes they led to three-pointers. And it was, again, you know, to reference back to my argument from earlier, if Texas had won, my big theme for today was going to be about, in this tournament of chaos and everything falling apart, it was the teams that had enough bodies that were able to get it done. Miami clearly ducked that narrative, but that narrative was initially built here in this game, where I just felt like, from the offensive and defensive standpoint, a Creighton team that I had been, like, way too high on. Like, I wrote the re-ranking, the Sweet 16post for ESports.com, and I was way too high on Creighton.
I do not have a chip I was wrong button. I'm with that. So hold on. In honor of that, though, you are going to get it. This must be done here. Where is it? Here we go. This is chip, but it's GP.
They're not good.
No, wait, that was wrong. Sorry. Well, that, but also
I was wrong.
There we go. Okay, here we go.
But I, you know, Xavier fans were in my mentions because, of course, Xavier blasted, you know, Creighton, and they were like, what are you doing, you know, moving Creighton up? And I was like, well, they got this versatility scoring, you know, like, they can get it from Carpenter, they can get it from Alexander, they can get it from Shireman. Nembhard just went off in this tournament, you know, blah, 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 blah. They got so many different ways to beat you. But, like, I don't have a sixth option with this Creighton team right now, and I just think San Diego State's a better, like, capital T team. And that's what we saw in this game, is that they were able to be a little bit fresher, get a few more offensive rebounds, a little bit more effort, a little bit more energy. And, like, that ultimately ended up tipping this thing. It's a 1-point game that was decided on a free throw. So, like, yes, there are alternate universes. I know that you're a big multiverse guy, but, like, there are alternate universes that Creighton is in the Final Four. You know, and this is a huge moment for Greg McDermott and a Jays program that has had a ton of great coaches in its history and a lot of, like, great pride and good fan support. But ultimately, man, it just kind of felt like they just didn't have it, man. They didn't have enough juice, didn't have enough gas. And that's where Brian Dutcher and San Diego State, and the way that team is built, the way that they play, a little bit more well-balanced. Nobody, no one on San Diego State's roster played more than 30 minutes in this. Trammell played 31.
Yeah, they needed him. Yeah.
But everybody else, double digit minutes. And again, all the starting five, 35 or more. Nobody on the bench, double digit minutes. Just different.
Look, man, at this graphic on the screen. Look at this. Look what the Aztecs are doing to just kill the souls of their opponents. The averages, I'm going to say it out loud for everyone listening on their phone. Mountain West title game, Utah State was averaging 78, held to 57. Charleston averaging 80, held to 57. Furman averaging 81, held to 52. Bama averaging 82, held to 64. Creighton averaging 74.5, held to 56 points. They dictate the terms under which the game will be played. That doesn't change under Dutcher. By the way, San Diego State is 9-1. In games decided by 5 points or fewer, they are just comfortable in this, man. They are beyond comfortable. And to extend that, Alabama and Creighton, two teams that are good at that, not high level shooting the three, but certainly willing and wanting to shoot the three, and certainly can get hot. They went 5 of 44 from 3-point range. Did Bama and Creighton? Goodness, man.
San Diego Incredible. State is the example of. I kind of think 3-point defense is BS.
Like, it's not BS.
It's a little column A.
It's a little column A and a little column B, because, and this is after talking to coaches on this stuff.
Because you chase them off the way line.
The team will team you on that end of the floor. It can have cumulative effects on how you actually get your shots off and where you get your shots off. I understand the theory that 3-point defense can sometimes be a factor of luck. I just don't buy into it, because what's necessarily the difference from taking a shot from 23 feet versus a half foot inside the three point line. Really? Like, so I think there can be some luck, but I actually think that teams that are doing it and have proven it, they have an influence over that. That's my take on that.
But 2 for 17 from three for Creighton, 2 for 17 from three. Creighton was 9 for 24 against Princeton, 11 for 24 against Baylor, only 3 for 20 against NC State. But I mean, even the attempts, I mean, we're talking, this is a team that shot 26, 34, 21, 25, 23, 20, 24, 24, less than 20 attempts, 17 attempts against San Diego State. That's where, because what I've heard, like my pushback is the chase them off the line mentality. It's like, based on the way that we scheme our defense, like we want to not just contest, but we want to even make it so that you don't want to take that three. And San Diego State, with one of the best three-point defenses in the entire nation, seemed to prove that here against a team that can be very, very dangerous from three.
How about this for San Diego State? The second team ever to hold all four opponents en route to a Final Four below 25% three-point shooting to the Final Four. Trivia time! Who's the other team? It's happened within the past... I'll give you a window. Let's say it's happened within the past 4 to 14 seasons.
In the last 4 to 14 seasons, there's been a team. Oh. And what was
the only team ever, but the answer falls in that range. Yes.
What was the statistic for 3-point defense?
Hold all four opponents under 25% 3-point shooting in every game going to the Final Four.
UConn 2014.
Syracuse 2013 did it. Syracuse held opponents collectively to 15% from 3-point range. San Diego State, 17%. By the way, Darian Trammell, fourth player ever to go to hit a game-winning foul shot with 2.0 seconds or under remaining this deep into the tournament. So Elite Eight, Final Four, National Championship. The others to do it. And yeah, it's a little bit of a bump, bump, ba-dum for Creighton, obviously, but he got it. That was the bucket that sealed it. Hal Lear shouts to 1956 Temple against Cincinnati. Raymar Morgan versus Tennessee for Michigan State in 2010. An unforgettable foul shot. The third, there are four instances. Lear, Morgan, Trammell, and then 2019, Kyle Guy. Mm. In the Final Four, controversial call. I actually thought it was a good call against Auburn. So, a little history.
Do we talk
there.
Enough about how that was a soft Final Four?
What do you mean?
So, Duke and North Carolina were the best teams in the country that season.
Reminder, everyone listening, this is Cover 3 Podcast, Chip Patterson, our college football podcast. He is based Duke in the Triangle area Michigan and is a State. Lifelong resident of the state of North Carolina. I am now outflanked on this podcast by two NC residents. That's right.
Listen, that ACC tournament semifinal between Duke and North Carolina was phenomenal. Like, that was because Zion was healthy. And that was not the case. Obviously, he leaves the first game. Second game, I think he sits out too, the one in Chapel Hill. And then when they play in the tournament, it's full rosters, both teams, like Kobe White's vibing, like everything is moving. That game was incredible. And I walked out of that game thinking, like, well, those are two of the best teams in the country. Then Duke gets beat by Michigan State in the Elite Eight. North Carolina gets beat by Auburn in the Sweet 16. But then you take a look back and you're like, all right, so Virginia had who did Virginia beat in the Final Four? They didn't even have to play Tom Izzo? Okay. All right. They should have played Texas Tech. Okay. So they just had to play Auburn in its first ever Final Four and then Texas Tech. Okay. All right. Cool. You know, I'm just saying that, like, in 2019, I thought the two best teams in the country were Duke and North Carolina. So, you know.
But that's
back at you, boomerang trivia time. Okay, so.
Okay, let's go.
I said Connecticut. And we're going to get into, like, Final Four look-aheads in just a little bit. Can you name the starting five of UConn's 2014 national title team on that first Monday in April?
Okay. So you've got Boatwright, got Shabazz. I was there.
I mean, listen,
give me a second. Boatwright, Shabazz, DeAndre Daniels.
Yep.
hold on, the white guy. Neil Scafai.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, you're right.
Who is the big man in the middle?
The big man, yep.
I'm on the right track? Give me a second.
Yeah, you are.
Give me a second. Come on.
6'10".
Hold on.
Sophomore. Because all this UConn stuff had me digging.
Nita Brimer.
And I was I looked at this starting five, and it blew my mind. Because I look at the Kentucky starting five, and it's like Aaron Harrison, Andrew Harrison, James Young, Julius Randle, Jakari Jackson, Poynter is coming off the bench. Like, of course, I remember all these guys.
Tell me I'm right.
And I do not remember a lot of this UConn rotation.
Give it to me. That was a celebratory headphone.
Wait, did you say it?
I said Amita Brahma.
Oh, no.
That's not it?
No.
He's... What?
No. Brahma came off the bench.
Oh, this is an outrage.
4 out of 5 is still impressive.
Not it? He didn't... Brahma didn't start?
Nope.
Can I get a fact check? I'm looking at... Hold on, let me look this up. Yeah, give it to me.
Philip Nolan.
Nolan started in the title game?
Yep.
I'm looking it up right now.
Played 19 minutes. Brahma played 13.
This is... My gosh, that's embarrassing.
So should
Shoot the guy with a $600,000 suit. Go.
I can't believe I got it wrong. I was convinced.
This is shameful. This is absolutely shameful for me.
No, you know what? I think UConn fans are going Brahma too. It's ridiculous. I can't believe I got it wrong. Philip Nolan.
Yeah, Philip Nolan, starting big man. But anyway, like at that UConn team, I was like, how? But the answer to how on this San Diego State note is how? Well, you held Kentucky to 54 points. You held Florida, the number 3 team at KenPom, to 53. You held Michigan State, the number 9 team at KenPom, to 54. Like, they were locked down. Like, slow pace, but like locked down defensively. And you know, sometimes like that is the UConn. It's interesting because UConn's more well-rounded, better offensively, but like the UConn path to winning a title is actually more like what San Diego State's facing right now.
I'd buy that. I think that's fair. I think there's something to that. Let's do a quick GP and I are going to do the full blown, you know, Final Four look ahead things, you know, storylines and just takeaways and all that, but we'll do a brief Final Four look ahead. You want another break in here? You got another thing queued up for me? You want a break right now? I don't have this in the
Google. Actually, yeah, let's do that right now so that everybody
knows. Here's what we're going to do. We are going to talk about the Final Four, and then I'm going to talk about the most surprising Final Four runs that we've ever seen. But first, Nada, do your thing!
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
All right, there we have it. Okay, so Final Four look ahead. First of all, can you put this graphic up that our social team put up earlier on Twitter? Look at this thing. I don't think Chip has seen it yet. I sent it to Nada. This thing is an instant classic. We're going down to Houston. Look at the choice. Houston, we have liftoff. And inside the space, again, if you're listening, you can't see it. Look for the, I think this is under CBS Sports and not CBS Sports. Yeah, it's under the CBS Sports main one. In the spacesuits, we got
Brian Dutcher.
Come on, man.
An owl.
No, John Earl Davis. Come on. They put the owl in the spacesuit, which I actually appreciate. And you don't want to know why I appreciate it?
Why? Because owls can fly?
Well, yeah, but then the owl got left out of visiting the Empire State Building. So we got Brian Dutcher, Nigel Pack, Dan Hurley, and Owly the Owl. That's incredible. Hurley's face is just awesome. The owl looks like it might, maybe those are its actual eyes. It might be under hallucinogens in that photo. But this is your final four. How about this? San Diego State, the only team of these four ranked in the preseason poll. Aztecs were 19th. All four teams were ranked in the final poll of this season. Let me bring up this exact one so we have it here. So while the actual composite of this year's four national semifinalists is unexpected and among the highest total seeds we have seen, you still have teams that were playing well heading into the tournament. So in the final poll, and remember, there's no AP poll after the tournament, so this is the last one. This will be reflected forever. UConn was 10th. Miami was 16. San Diego State was 18. And yeah, you bet it. FAU, 25th in the poll in the final week. So all ranked teams are headed to Houston to play in the national semifinals. San Diego State and FAU have played twice in their history, 2000 and 2002. San Diego State won both of those games. They won them comfortably. No one playing in those is playing in these, obviously, but they won 90-57 and 91-75. I do have a trivia time for you, and it does not involve Philip Nolan or Amita Brima. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
This will be just the UConn and Miami on the other side of it. It's the second time ever there's been a 4-5 in a Final Four matchup. Can you guess the other? And my hint to you, I'll give you three guesses. I don't know if you can get this. This is fun. This is a tough one at home. If you know your history, though, it's in the 90s. There was a 4-5 matchup. Who do you think it was?
4-5 in the semis.
In the national semis, yep. The five and it was like genuinely surprising. I remember when I was younger, this five making it to the Final Four. If it wasn't the first, it was like the second or third instance where I remember thinking to myself, wow. So it's like sometimes, you know, the best teams don't actually get to the Final Four.
I'm doing no hands. No hands. No hands, no cheating. Was one of them the Syracuse 90, is that a 96 team?
Bingo.
Oh, nice. All right. Okay.
Who's the five? I let's see if the chat's helping you out here. Is the chat?
No.
The chat has it.
Because Syracuse played Kentucky and lost.
Correct.
In the championship game.
76-67, if my memory serves correctly.
I don't have the other. I don't remember the semifinal opponent. I just remember the Syracuse run, and I remember their seed being around there, but I don't remember who they beat in the semis. So I'll take the L.
Mississippi State Bulldogs with Dante Jones and Eric Dampier. Who was the head coach?
Yeah.
Richard Williams was the head coach of Mississippi State.
Gotcha.
Five seed got there. So this will be the first 4-5 in a national semi since. It's also it's an old school Big East affair. These two teams did used to play each other in conference play way back. Hey, kiddos, Miami and UConn used to share a conference. Now they're meeting back around in the national semis. Jim Larranaga is the only one here with Final Four experience. Did it with Mason. And again, did it on the 17-year anniversary of getting there overall. What else? You've got your South Florida Flavors with Miami and FAU. Boca Raton and Coral Gables, stand the hell up. There had never been a South Florida team to make the Final Four until this year, and now they have two of them. You've also got this weird thing where FAU is heading to the American. It's leaving CUSA. And San Diego State, it's not done. It's the worst kept secret in sports. It's going to go to the Pac-12 at some point. So these conferences, the Mountain West and CUSA, will actually financially benefit in the next 3, 4, 5 years because the units will space out, and they're making millions upon millions upon millions of dollars for this. So it's a nice parting gift for those leagues. SDSU is just a matter of if, or not a matter of if, but just a time of when with all of that. I texted
you on that. That's the lamest thing to bring up. I always feel bad, but like, just because I'm so embedded in the college football side of this, that like conference realignment, like that's the Cover 3 podcast on March 26th. Like, yes, if there is any conference realignment buzz, then it is going to be top of mind. And one of the things that we're actually planning as a show is like, oh yeah, don't forget, like, FAU, which, like, Tom Herman's going to be the new head coach. Like, they are going to be in the American. You know, Houston is going to be in the Big 12. There were a lot of second weekend moving pieces. You know, UCLA is going to be in the Big 10. Yeah. You know, like, it was an interesting sort of back burner, like, ninth most important storyline. But I at least was latching onto this thinking for FAU, for Charlotte winning the CBI. Like, you were sitting here talking about North Texas having success in the NIT and Charlotte having success in the CBI and FAU making it to the Final Four. And you're like, man, how great is this for Conference USA? Like, for a minute, like, all these teams, all three of them that I just mentioned, are going to be in the American Athletic Conference next season. Just a little back burner thing to keep in mind as we're thinking about where all these teams stack in their neighborhoods, much less the national picture.
A few more things here. Every team that's going to the Final Four had some, you know, you got to overcome adversity. FAU could have, if they give Memphis the timeout, probably done in the first round.
Miami and Drake.
San Diego State was in a tight one against Charleston in the first round. Miami was down big and went on a 16-1 run and ran away with it in the first round. And then UConn, I was in the building for both that and UConn-Iona. Iona actually led at halftime of that game. So the ways that you get to the Final Four eventually are obviously quite interesting. And it is eclectic. I am excited to cover it, but I'm also excited for the fan bases. And like, FAU came big to the Garden. Really big to the Garden, man. Like, I was so impressed. Now, K-State still outflanked them, but these are, you know, on the surface. And again, we'll dive deeper into this with GP on Tuesday. But you got Brian Dutcher, who wasn't a head coach until he was like 56, 57 years old. San Diego State would have been probably a 1 and a 2 at the worst in 2020. Like, it was a dominant team. And then what we remember, Kansas was 1 in Ken Pom. Dayton was having this incredible year. But San Diego State was good enough to win a national title that season too. So it finally gets some redemption in there. That's a really cool story. FAU kind of speaks for itself. And I'll give a few quick notes on them before we get out of here. UConn under Hurley, he hadn't won a tournament game with the program till this year. And now he's going to the Final Four. And the Huskies are coming full circle in the context of the season. You know, they looked incredible in November. They win their PK85 event. Then they've got the lull. Hurley gets COVID. He misses a game. And they drop 6 of 8. And now here they are. They're just the vibes I get off of this UConn team that are just like 90s, 2000s. Like, this roster has a lot of that. And it's really cool to see just because, you know, being, or, you know, well, being look, around let college basketball you, when that was happening,
you know, was, like, was you know, Dan, you know, this program through and through, but like, to me, I think about Adama Sanogo, because Adama Sanogo was one of the best freshmen in the country, one of the best freshmen in the Big East when he stepped in. And that was the first year that UConn was in the Big East. Like, they had just made their arrival. It was Dan Hurley's third year on the job. And it was the first year that they made the NCAA tournament. And I just sense that there is some ownership, you know, that there is, like, and again, I'm asking you because you were with them in Albany, but like, I just think that there is something about these upperclassmen who build to this point. And it goes back to my Jordan Miller, Miami reference where it's like when you put in this much and you get so close and then you feel that heartbreak. I mean, there is nothing like I wish I could take every college basketball fan and put them with me in the losing locker room in the NCAA tournament. The smells, the sounds, like everything in there, it will rock your soul. Like, for real. I mean, it is incredible the human emotion that is felt and how raw it is. And I think about Sanogo. As soon as he got a part of the roster, he was very quickly an important part of UConn basketball. So he has become the face of this resurgence. And it's just like, man, that is the kind of player who, because of his physical talents and also just how good he is, we'll be like, I can will this team to a win right now. And it is so impressive to see this UConn group build to this point. Back to what GP and you have referenced, if you're going to get us now because it's coming. Like Dan Hurley calling a shot, all that sweet. But I also want to put the focus on the players who have been there for all of these years of with in college football, we say you lose big, you lose small, you win big. And you have to go through those steps to be able to win big. Feels like UConn's about to win big.
And on the Sanogo stuff, Hurley referenced this at one of his press conferences, but because Klingon has been such a boost as a freshman and been better than anyone expected him to be, Sanogo was on the receiving end of some just straight up trash from UConn fans. And this isn't the entire fan base. This is probably 1 or 2% of the fan base. But just stuff where the official account would tweet or put something on the gram, as the kids say. I promise not to use that phrase again. Not the gram.
Oh, in the comment section, it's toxic.
And then it's just why is he starting? Bench this guy, play Kling in 30 minutes. And that stuff, they tried their best to shut it out, but it became a thing. And so to see Sanogo continue to kick ass and be an incredible player and a major force for that team. And Hawkins, he went off and they're just loaded. UConn's absolutely loaded, and we'll see how they handle. They were understandably a chic Final Four pick, and even for some a national title pick. But now they're going to go into this being the comfortable favorite to win it all, and we'll see. And on the last with storylines and stuff, and just Larinaga doing this at 73 with Miami, and the way that they were able to do it, they just played Houston in submission in a way that I didn't think Houston was capable of falling flat. It was weird, but credit to Miami for doing that. And then coming back and winning the way it did against Texas in a big spot for Miami to get down there. You have these fan bases, Miami basketball, San Diego State and their Aztecs. And that's the show is going to travel. The show is heading to Houston and is going to be there in a big way. And again, FAU. So I'll talk FAU here real quick.
Oh, they've got an advantage. They've got a spiritual advantage.
FAU does?
Yeah, the Aztec people did not want to
miss this.
Yeah, the Aztec people did not want to miss
this. Is this someone that is it? This what you're about to say? Did you fact check this before we go with this claim?
I did. I actually read one religious studies thesis on Mesoamerican religious beliefs when it comes to owls. And in general, they respected, but did not want any piece of these owls. We have discovered a lot of Aztec whistles, that would have been associated with death ceremonies that were carved in the shape of an owl. And the Aztec people, they did. And to be fair, I mean, it's kind of like how I feel about raccoons. That's your time, all right? All right, bud. You stay over there. I don't want to mess with you. You got all kinds of crazy stuff.
You're afraid of raccoons?
No, but I respect them, and I will not try to engage in battle with the. Do you engage in battle with a raccoon?
I'm not looking to engage in battle with a raccoon.
No, absolutely not. We got too much else on the line. Stakes are too high out here to be engaging in battle with a raccoon and suffer the repercussions. And apparently that's the way the Aztec people felt about these owls, these night hunters, these nocturnal animals that they didn't want to mess with. So I think the Aztec people, if they didn't like owls, it might be an advantage for FAU.
Okay, well, we'll see about that. Garden was incredible, as it always is. The East region, East regional, I should say. It's the all the games in the corner of the bracket, that's the region. The regionals are actually the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. So the regional, all three games were tremendous. I think I was at the best of the four because every single game was competitive and decided late. And just what a performance. To see Marquise Noel do what he did in two games and for that building to come alive and to see Carmelo after I wasn't going to bother Carmelo and Mace and Cameron. I was not bothering them. They're standing like right next to me in the back. But a part of me was like, should I go over and just talk to these guys about Noel? But I actually had to run. I actually had to go and do like an HQ hit in like less than 90 seconds. So I was like, nah, we're good. But it was kind of fun to watch that stuff behind the scenes. And for the FAU fan base, just showing up in huge numbers in that building this tournament always delivers and that building always delivers. And for Dusty May and that team, come on now. They are for real. By the way, I will have a story that I believe we are going to publish on Monday. Dusty May shared something with me off the record in January and said that I could use it at a future date when he was, further along in his career. And then I called
him. And now is further along.
I called him when they made the Sweet 16. And I said, if you make the Final Four, let me write this. And he said, if we make the Final Four, you can write it. So I'm not going to spoil it. But there is an interesting origin story to Dusty May being at FAU that has not been reported. So that will be on the site on Monday, I believe. I'm going to finish writing it tonight, and I think we're going to try and pub that tomorrow. From Dusty to do this, and with I understand it's a collection of players that is mostly anonymous to the country, but they're nine deep. Oh, by the way, they've got Jalen Gaffney who played at UConn, now opposite sides of the bracket, but Gaffney left UConn, now FAU. They're both in the tournament. And Janelle Davis of FAU played on the Indy Heat grassroots program. They were teammates. Now they're on opposite sides of the bracket. They're going to the Final Four as well. Some cool reunion stories there. The team doesn't rattle. They're impressive. And as I wrote, I don't write these things for effect. I write them because I believe. Now it's going to take a lot. I'm telling you, FAU can win the national championship. It is. Yeah. It has the guys, the coaching, the scheme, the depth, the three-point shooting, and the outright resolve. Does not rattle. Okay, against Tennessee, didn't matter. FDU was threatening them, didn't matter. Memphis got a little tight late. They got a beneficial call their way, didn't matter. They can win. I think I mentioned this earlier in the show on Creighton. They can win in the 50s, 60s, 70s, or 80s. They can do it. Does not matter. It would be one of the all-time stories in sports if they do it. But I don't consider that the story is a Cinderella story. The team is not a Cinderella team. They're 35-3. They're guaranteed to have more wins this season than any other team in the sport. No one can catch them in the Final Four or the CBI or the NIT or any of it. So no matter what happens, they're going to finish with more dubs than any other school. And they've been doing this all season long. And it's super duper impressive. And that was an awesome scene to cover on Saturday. And some of those players, like I got them on HQ, and there was a look of, for a couple of them, it was like, we don't even know how to interpret what's happening right now. And that's the best. That's the best. Well,
that's why I was going to say, if FAU, to build on Matt Norlander's I Own College Basketball podcast statement and in his column that they can win a national championship, if FAU wins a national championship, it is, in my opinion, not arguable that it goes down as one of the Cinderella or at least like miracle tournament runs, because since 1979, only six teams have won the national championship with odds of 20-1 or longer on Selection Sunday. Those teams are the 2014 UConn team, which we couldn't even come up with the starting five. the 1985 Villanova team that is widely regarded as, like, you know, one of the, like, great. Raleigh Massimino, the, you know, leads that team, their incredible shooting performance, yada, yada, yada. 2011 UConn, we've got Kemba going Super Saiyan. 1983 NC State, was it a pass or a missed shot? 1988 Kansas, Danny and the Miracles, and 2006 Florida. So since 1979, there have only been six teams who have won the national championship with pre-tournament betting odds of 20-1 or longer. FAU would clearly be a part of this. In fact, the only team remaining who had odds of better than 20-1 is UConn. Texas could have been there, but of course they lost. Those other ones would be Houston, Alabama, Kansas, Purdue, UCLA, Arizona, and Gonzaga. So for FAU to win would put them in the same conversation as a 1985 Villanova, a 1983 NC State, 1988 Kansas, the UConn teams of 14 and 11. Like, it would look historically like a Cinderella type run, even though if they win the national championship, there'd be, what, a 37 win team? Mm-hmm. 36. Which one?
What, for FAU?
Yeah, if FAU wins the title.
37.
Yeah. Even though they would be a 37-win national champion, it would still look, based on the expectations in the betting market and otherwise, you know, closer to a 1985 Villanova, 1983 NC State.
Final four teams. San Diego State won its league, won its conference tournament. FAU won its league, won its conference tournament. Miami won its league, was the one seed, did not win its conference tournament. UConn did not win its league, did not win its conference tournament. UConn has more losses than any team in the final four, but it is also rated comfortably as the best in terms of projected futures and then predictive metrics. In KenPom specifically, UConn is 1, San Diego State is 14, FAU is 17, and Miami is 22. Let's wrap it up with this. The most surprising final four runs in modern history, since they went to seeding. Dude, what year did they go to seeding, Chip?
1979.
That's right, buddy. That's right.
Billy Corgan being a jerk doesn't turn you off from Smashing Pumpkins.
You know what he wants.
Separates the art from the artist. Okay, anything before bad, I'll do bad, and everything before, we're good.
Here's my order: top 10. 2007 South Carolina, 2017 South Carolina. I was there. MSG has a 7 seed. They beat 10 seed Marquette, 2 seed Duke, 3 seed Baylor, and 4 seed Florida. Shouts to Sindarius Thornwell. Shouts to Devin
Sindarius
Downing.
Thornwell is also the counter to the idea that Duke in Madison Square Garden was unbeatable.
That's correct. That is Duke. Correct.
Yeah.
Number 9 on this list, I have this year's FAU team from the 9 spot. Memphis, 16 seed FDU. This is... So the way I did this was the team, the road, how strong it was. Like, FAU was ranked. Like, it's unlikely. Historically, this is unreal. But I think it's the 9th most unlikely Final Four run we've had. All right? They beat Memphis, FDU as a 16, 4 seed Tennessee, 3 seed K-State. Number 8, the first Butler team. It was a 5 seed, but it's Butler. All right? And it was the second in this run of mid-major / Cinderella's. Yes, it had a future pro on the team in Gordon Hayward. Yes, it almost beat Duke on the greatest missed shot, arguably, in the history of the tournament. Beat 12 seed UTEP, 13 seed Murray State, top seed Cuse. I'm sorry, K-State, you're going to take a lot of strays here. This the K-State is, by the way, lost nine straight Elite Eight games. They've lost so many Elite Eight games in a row, haven't made the Final Four or cut just short. It's been 60. It'll be 60 years officially next year. Number 7 on the list. It's COVID, so I didn't know where to put this, but it's UCLA. Now it's UCLA. It's a big program. UCLA lost 4 straight games heading into the 21 tournament, barely got in the field, won the first 4 game against 11 seed Michigan State, then beat BYU the 6, Abilene Christian the 4, second seed at Alabama, top seed in Michigan to get there. I put them there. They were the toughest one to sort out, but that's where I land them. Going to go to the original. Wow, we got a 64-team field, and we got some wackiness here. LSU. 86, 11 seed. They beat 6 seed Purdue, 3 seed Memphis State. They did the toughest road the whole way. 6 seed Purdue, 3 seed Memphis State. It was Memphis State back then. 2 seed Georgia Tech, number 1 Kentucky, to get there. Now we get to the top half. Number five, 2011 Butler. Didn't have Hayward, was an 8 seed, almost lost to Old Dominion and Pitt in an incredible first weekend. This team at one point was 14-9. All right. It got up to an 8 seed, beat Old Dominion, Pitt, 4 seed Wisconsin, 2 seed Florida to get to the second Final Four in as many years and really establish and firm up the legend of that is Brad Stevens. Top four. You want to guess? You want to try and guess my order here?
For your top four unlikely Final Four runs.
Yep. Here we go. 2013, Wichita State. That's my number four. They were a 9 seed. I saw them in person beat Pitt as an 8 and number 1 seed Gonzaga. That was out in Salt Lake City a decade ago. Then they went out to L.A. They beat, remember, LaSalle as a 13 made the Sweet 16. That actually happened. And then they beat 2 seed Ohio State to get to the Final Four under Greg Marshall. That was the year before they got to the tournament undefeated and ultimately got knocked off in the second round in that
Loyola epic 3. Kentucky.
Loyola Chicago is the 3. 11 seed 2018. Just a magical run. Beat 6 seed Miami and 3 seed Tennessee. Both of those were won in the closing seconds. And then they got by Nevada by just 1 point with Muss as the coach. That was the run that got him on the road to Arkansas. And then they knocked off, yes,
Kansas State.
K-State got knocked off in a regional final. Like yet again, they keep getting in the way of this stuff. The thing that's amazing about...
Can I sit on that one real quick? Yeah. I showed up to Atlanta. Virginia had been bounced because they were the one in the South. Kentucky was there. And we were like, this is it. This is Kentucky, just like easy, slip and slide. Like it's Loyola. It's, you know, Kentucky had to play Kansas State. It was going to be Loyola and Nevada. Like just think about that from a Kentucky fan base standpoint. All you got to do is beat Kansas State and then the Loyola Nevada winner, and you're in the Final Four. That building on Friday, because it was a Friday Sunday, if I remember correctly, but like BBN was filling that place. Shout out to Bruce Weber, Cartier Jara, like just a hard scrabble K-State squad in that year in 2018 that was able to knock them off. But yeah, they didn't end up falling short to Loyola and Sister Jean in that magical run.
The Sister Jean effect. Loyola Chicago hadn't been to the tournament in 3 decades. There's a lot going into that, and that's that had to be 3. Number 2? Which one is it? What do you think?
Kansas? 88?
Not on the list, man. No, no shot.
Oh, yeah, because it's... have you already mentioned VCU 11?
I have not. That is number 2. 2011, VCU, the first team to go from First Four to Final Four. Speculation whether it even should be in the tournament. I believe it was Billis that famously said VCU should not be in the field. It beat USC in the first four, then knocked off Georgetown, Purdue. Purdue was a 3. Florida State is a 10, and then went just ballistic from 3-point range and beat that's a top seeded Kansas, a number 1 that year. I think Kansas. I'm not going to speak for Kansas fans, but over the years, it feels like of all the like that is in the top 3 of like. That team didn't make a Final Four. Are you kidding me? VCU did it. And that means number 1 is, of course, 2006 George Mason, which is the first, like, it's the first Cinderella team to do it. And they got in over Hofstra. And there was a lot of lamenting. I think Vital was saying, why isn't Hofstra in the field? And because Hofstra, like, I think Hofstra swept Mason, like, went 3-0 against him. But Mason got in. I think it was the last team into the field. It was a 65-team field. There wasn't 68 teams in there. There was 65. There was only one playing game. They beat 6-seed Michigan State, 3-seed North Carolina, 7-seed Wichita State, and then the epic OT 86-84 win over a stacked UConn team. Denham Brown's shot went long. That's my top 10. You had the likes of Wisconsin in 2000. Someone in the chat mentioned them. They were certainly under consideration. Penn was a 9. What year did they do that, Chip?
1970. Actually,
nine.
I do know that because FAU is the 3rd 9. I've been writing in 10 out of the last 13 days, I've written a story for CBSSports.com that is the storylines for the day ahead. And it is not anywhere close to what Gary Parrish has to do for like what, 200 days out of a year of just like writing a new story every single day that is the same day. But when you're squeezing the last bit of juice out of that lemon, you're like, I don't know, man, I've been talking about FAU a lot. Okay. They're really deep in this tournament. What's the story then? How many nines have there been? And sure enough, 11s have gotten to the Final Four more often than a nine.
That's right.
Eights That's right. have gotten to the Final Four three times more often than a nine. Did I catch a niner? Nine is actually one of the least likely seed lines in the, like, outside of, you know, deep, deep, deep in the bracket that you're going to have. So, yeah, FAU, I did know that it's Penn and it's Wichita State, and now it's FAU, the only three nines to make it to the Final Four.
Yep, and the only other team that was nine or worse I didn't have on my list, I think here was 2016, Syracuse was a 10. I think that's the only one I didn't include in there along with Penn.
Like, that's my list. That team.
Say it again.
Like the Syracuse run, the late era, especially now that Boeheim's retired, we can like start to talk about like late era Boeheim. The late era Boeheim run did require one NBA talent.
Yes.
Like okay. You had.
I was there when they did it. I was, but it's like, of course.
Like this is a huge game. You're playing zone defense. It's one possession. Oh, you've got one player who is an NBA talent who can just put the ball in his hands and make it happen. I feel like Malachi Richardson was that player on that team.
They got it done. They beat Gonzaga and Virginia in Chicago. I do remember that well. Man, oh man. That was the final four of Jim Boeheim's career. I think that's about going to do it here. We've gone, man, we really did go long. Now it's like, what are you guys doing? 70 plus minutes. The Final Four is set. We will preview the games. GP and I will be back for a Tuesday episode, so you can be on the lookout for that.
Hey GP, I know you're watching on the onboard in-flight Wi-Fi.
Wow,
you got that Delta Gold Club.
That's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast, our college football counterpart. Be sure to subscribe to that YouTube channel. What do you do to the like button over there? You're not smashing it like Brandon Davies. What are you doing?
No, I think we do smash. I mean,
yeah,
smash that subscribe, smash that like. Come in, join us in the chat because, like, I mean, listen, we're here at like 75 minutes, but like our chat is subscriber only mode, so you do have to be.
Ours is as well, right? Nada, this is subscriber only mode.
Yeah.
Of course. You think I'm turning down free subscribers? No.
Yeah. Okay. So that's I very quickly blow through that to get to the communal aspect. Like, smash that subscribe, smash that like. Come and join us in the chat. We will be taking live questions every single Thursday, as we always do. In addition to the big old bag of mail, leave us a 5-star review. Put that question in the, you know, yada yada yada.
You do very frequent mailbag episodes. We do not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the thing that I have learned is that our college football, you talk 12 months a year about a season that only has 12 games a year. Like, it inherently requires, like, it is a talking sport. It is a sport that is built less on results and more on talking about what's going on. And so I have found that, like, yes, it helps, but it also, like, the people that care as much as we care have really, like, fun ideas and, like, oh, okay, like, I get excited and enthused sometimes by hearing what our listeners have to say, more so than I would just trying to scan the headlines and come up with a podcast. So that's probably one reason why.
I hear you. I think that's a viable option every now and then. We will be back on Tuesday. Thank you, everyone, again. If you've gotten to the end of this, hit the like button, continue to subscribe, spread the word. You've made this the most successful month in the history of this podcast. We appreciate you. So very, very much. We will be back. We are scheduled to be back at the latest on Tuesday morning. I am Matt Norlander. This is Chip Patterson. I'm going to hit one more random one on the button. Which one are we going to go with here? Let's go with a little more Tobias.
There are dozens of us. Dozens!
We will see you on Tuesday. Take care.
Hey, It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.